Good morning. You're almost into the end of the second module of the year, isn't it? And for those who were freshers at the beginning of the year, the freshers night is over and you don't want to be considered freshers anymore, isn't it? But I still am going to pick on the freshers a bit this morning to start with. Fair enough? And for those of you who don't consider yourself to be freshers, just think back on the day that you were a fresher for a little bit of a time, okay? I want to think about, the emotional journey that you went through as you applied to SIACS and as you got admission into SIACS and, as you came here and settled down and stuff like that, Great institutions, you've heard good stories about the institution and, so for many of us it was a dream destination. So among all the other emotions that you felt, would it be wrong if I say that we had a little pride when we got here, when we got the admission, right? Well, of course, as you progressed in the second module, and the first module you came to know about what plagiarism is and how serious we are about that, simple stuff like copying, which is not even, no one bothers about in a state like Bihar, but here people, make it a big deal, right? So you came to know about the plagiarism and, then of course you have the string of rules coming from the academic dean, the student dean, the chef, the librarian, the chaplain, and the campus manager, who else? Maybe the security guard, and, so there is a lot of rules coming your way, and then slowly you get into your next stage of emotional status of your SIACS life. Some of you feel anger, some of you feel skepticism, some of you feel I don't know what. But among all those emotions, again, and then of course the assignments hit you, right? The second module assignments hit you, and then you suddenly realize on a Friday evening that you got submitted by Monday morning, and then you're scrambling, and one emotion called fear sets in slowly, isn't it? Fear and pride. Do we have those emotions? If you don't have, you can stop listening to this message right now. But if you have those emotions like I do, let's look at what message the Lord wants, Lord brings us to them about today. So, what's wrong with pride and fear? Is there anything wrong with feeling proud to be part of a great institution? Is there anything wrong to be a little afraid of the academic grades and hence, focus on studies? Is there anything wrong with being afraid of the student dean, not because of his height and stuff like that, but because ultimately you don't like to be disciplined, you don't like to fall into the bad books of the student dean, right? So is there anything wrong with being with pride and fear? On the surface of it, probably not. But let's think a little bit more this morning. We ran a program called the Lead Like Jesus just last two Saturdays. For those of you who attended it, maybe you already know what is coming from me. This program is based on a book called Lead Like Jesus, written by Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges. And they say that pride and fear, if left unchecked, can lead to ego. Are they right? Last evening when I was preparing for this message, my wife asked me, what are you going to speak on? I said, ego. She had a bright smile on her face and she said, that should be easy for you. I know what you're thinking, but I didn't think that. I said, yes, of course, darling. I have enough material to prepare a sermon on that, And her smile turned into a grin and she had that amused look and she mumbled, yes, that's what I really meant. And that's when it hit me, you know. She was not talking about me whether I had material to speak on ego. She was saying that I had enough of it so that I could make a good sermon out of it, isn't it? You know, I am considered a successful corporate executive. Wherever I have been in the corporate, I have brought in success. When I was a manufacturing head, I have sort of triple the manufacturing capacity in about 2 years' time. When I was the corporate quality head of an organization, I had brought in multiple international awards for the recognitions and awards for the organization. When I was the LME head, I improved the learning penetration by 300% in 2 years and brought in multiple international awards and recognitions for the organization. So, am I proud of them? Heck, I am. So I have enough of ego and, you know, to pride to talk about, this. About 12 years back, we shifted to Bangalore. And when I came here, people had already, my fame had sort of, you know, what you call it, that came before me. And, a small congregation approached me in Bangalore to take on their leadership. And I did. I thought, look, if I could do wonders in corporates, what is leading a small congregation in a progressive city like Bangalore? I think it should be cakewalk, right? So I took on and I went on and applied all my corporate wisdom and, you know, tactics and strategies to the church. Within 3 years, the church membership became one-third. The church membership became one-third of what it was. The founders themselves left. So we were really faced with this situation. What to do? Should we continue? Should we not? I tried different things, brought in new people, but no, I couldn't sustain it. There are times when I preach to a congregation of three people and two of them from my family. What was the problem? The problem was my pride. I was, through my pride, I was edging God out of the equation. Through my pride that I can do, I have done it, I have the capability to do this. This is no rocket science. I was relying on my strength and my wisdom and my knowledge to grow Christ's body. I was edging God out of the equation. Ego edging God out. That's what Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges talks about when he talks about ego. So it's not the Freudian ego that he talks about. It is edging God out through pride and fear. So when we have pride and fear, we edge God out. C.S. Lewis, in his book Mere Christianity, says this, I quote, "According to Christian teachers, the essential vice, the utmost evil, is pride. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are mere flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. It is pride which has been the chief cause of misery in every nation and every family since the world began." I repeat. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are mere flea bites in comparison to pride. Unquote. Sounds rather harsh, isn't it? Sounds rather judgmental, isn't it? Could this be the reality? Could this be the reality? Let's turn to Daniel chapter 4, shall we? Daniel chapter 4. And just follow through. We won't read specific, we will read one or two specific verses, but just follow through the story. Most of you know the story here. Our friend Nebuchadnezzar, the great king, he has a dream, right? And in the dream, he sees a magnificent tree, right? And the tree is so high that it could be seen from anywhere else in the world. It is so wide that it could shield, it could provide shelter to almost everyone. Its fruits are so abundant that it could feed everybody, right? So it is, and lovely leaves provide shade to all the creatures of the earth. All creatures find shade under the, and the birds of the heaven find their nest in their branches. The fruits are abundant. Beautiful dream till now. And then comes the jarring note, isn't it? After Daniel 4:12 comes the jarring scene. Then in this dream, he sees an angel coming down and ordering the tree to be cut down. The angel orders, cut down the tree. The king is obviously perturbed, by the dream, and asks the court magicians to explain the dream to him. The court magicians are not able to. But of course, then we have our good Daniel, who comes and he is able to easily interpret the dream. He says, O king, this is you. The tree is you. And the cutting down on the tree and the subsequent actions are actually about what is likely to happen to the king himself and no one else. Daniel also explains that, of course, as for the dream, the king will be driven from his men. He will be like a beast in the field. He will eat grass like an ox, and he will be like this for 7 years. Daniel 4:20-25. However, Daniel also explains a silver lining in the dream. What is the silver lining in the dream? That's given in Daniel 4:26-27. Read it along with me. Daniel 4:26-27. Daniel says, and in as much as they gave the command to leave the stump and the roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. However, from what the Bible tells us, it doesn't look like Nebuchadnezzar listened to that sage advice from Daniel, right? 1 year later, Nebuchadnezzar looks at all that he has created and he says, this is something that I want you to remember. Daniel 4:30. What does Nebuchadnezzar say? He says, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? Is this not what I have built by my mighty power for my majesty? Just imagine what pride does. This is what pride does. It makes us take all the credit to ourselves. Makes us take all the credit to ourselves. When we want to give credit, we start looking for a mirror. We look into the mirror to give credit to others. That is what pride does. And that is what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. Is this not the great Babylon that I have built by my great power for my majesty, for the honor of my majesty? And of course, so Nebuchadnezzar was edging God out through his pride. And we see the result of that pride immediately. Right? Bible says in 4:31 that as soon as the words left the mouth of the king, what was predicted in the dream came true. He lost his sanity, the men deserted him, He eats grass like oxen. He is wet with dew. His hair grows like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Instant action from God. I have been reminded of this story whenever I felt tempted to take credit for successes in my life. And I wish that we will all do this. Remember the story, when we are tempted, when we go out, when we are in ministry, when our ministry succeeds, when our churches grow, when people praise us for the great messages that we bring, when I am tempted to say, look at the number of people I have mentored in science, look at the topics that I have taught, look at the leaders that I have sent out, look at what I have done, look at what I have accomplished. I pray that we will remember the story. Remember the story of Nebuchadnezzar. Let's look at another character in closing. Let's look at Pilate. You think he's a good guy or a bad guy? Obviously a bad guy, right? He sent Jesus to the cross, right? So all of us think that he's a bad guy. I also thought that he's actually a very bad guy, right? When I came to first read the story. And then I started studying the narrative of Pilate in all the four Gospels. All the four Gospels talk about him. If you really study the Gospel and all the four Gospels, you will realize that Pilate tries to release Jesus multiple times. He is unable to find anything really wrong with this guy, which requires a severe punishment. Forget about crucifixion. He says, look, this guy, I can't find anything wrong with this guy. Why on earth are you pressurizing me? Why have you brought him to me? But what happens in the end? In the end, the Jews tell him that, look, if you don't crucify him, you are not the emperor's friend anymore. If you release him, you are not the emperor's friend anymore. So to me, Pilate appears to be a guy who wanted to do the right thing. He knew what is the right thing to do. He wanted to do the right thing. Yet he gave in ultimately and ended up doing the wrong thing. What caused that? Why did Pilate give in? What made him give in? What made him succumb? It's fear. He was afraid that he will jeopardize his relationship with Herod. He was afraid that he will fall into the bad books of Caesar. He was afraid that the people will get into a riot. He was afraid that he will lose his position. He was afraid that he would lose his promotion that he could get later on. He was afraid. He was afraid. And he was all the more afraid, actually, when Jesus told him, when the Jews told him that this guy is claiming to be the Son of Man. He was even more afraid. Fear was driving him. And fear drove him. Even though he knew what was the right thing to do, even though he was convinced about the right thing to do, he could not do the right thing because fear drove him. Fear drove him to take an action that was wrong. That's what happens to us when we are driven by fear. That's what happens to us when we are driven by fear. You must be thinking, okay, look, these are good stories. We can learn from this. But look, Nebuchadnezzar and Pilate are not good guys. And they're pagans. They're not even believers. And we are sitting here in a chapel. We are in a theological seminary. And, so we can't really equate ourselves with Nebuchadnezzar and Pilate. We're not that bad, isn't it? If you're thinking so, yeah, sure. But I know that you know that there is something called spiritual pride. Right? All of us know and probably have preached and heard sermons on Jesus' parable of the Pharisees and the tax collector. Luke 18:9-14. So we won't speak about it. We know what Jesus said about the Pharisee and the tax collector. And we know who was having the spiritual pride. Right? I think that's a pride that all of us here need to be really, really aware of. Being in these institutions, being superior in many ways to others who do not have this privilege of learning in this institution. We are all the more susceptible to spiritual pride. Let me quote from Jonathan Edwards. This is from the works of Jonathan Edwards, from the book, The Works of Jonathan Edwards. Jonathan Edwards says, quote, "The first and the worst cause of errors that abound in our day and age is spiritual pride. This is the main door by which the devil comes into the hearts of those who are zealous for the advancement of Christ. It is the chief inlet of smoke from the bottomless pit of darken the mind and mislead the judgment. Pride is the main handle by which he has hold of Christian persons and the chief source of all the mischief that he introduces to clog and hinder a work of God. Spiritual pride is the mainspring, or at least the main support, of all other errors. Until the disease is cured, medicines are applied in vain to heal all other diseases." So this morning, we can analyze Nebuchadnezzar's action, we can criticize Pilate, but let's think about ourselves for a minute. Are there now times when we have felt proud of our achievements? Are there not times when we know what is the right thing to do and yet do not end up doing it because we are fearful of peer pressure, or what is generally known in the millennial generation as FOMO? Most of you know what FOMO is, right? Fear of missing out. Right? And there are times when we end up doing the wrong thing, knowing well that it is wrong because of peer pressure or FOMO. Fear and pride, we continuously edge God out through them. So, is there an antidote to fear and pride? Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges say that the antidote to ego is ego itself. You can only, if you convert that ego into exalting God only, you can stop edging God out. Ego as an antidote to ego. From edging God out to exalting God only. And we can do that through replacing pride with humility and replacing fear with God-grounded confidence. Just one word of advice. Humility is something that is seen by others but never, never claimed. The moment you say that, "in my humble opinion," you might as well end it with saying, "in my humble opinion, you are an idiot." So, humility is something that is seen by others, but never, never claimed. All eyes closed and all heads bowed. Let's look to the Lord and let's listen to God, who is asking us not to edge him out. We've been given this great inheritance through Jesus Christ by his work on the cross on a Good Friday. We have been given this great inheritance of God's presence, of being able to enjoy and able to glorify him and enjoy him through our lives. And yet, we continuously edge him out because of our pride and fear. This morning he is asking, "Do not edge me out, but exalt me. Do not have pride and fear, but replace them with humility and confidence." Father, we ask you to help us because we cannot do it in our own human strength. We cannot do it. So we ask you to help us through this day and through this year. In Jesus' precious name. Amen. Thank you all.
Thank you.